Hello, and welcome back to the Mojo Podcast with me, Richard Stokes. I hope you're staying safe and well, finding your own ways to survive and maybe even thrive during what I now see being called the Great Pause, which I think beats lockdown or quarantine. If you're listening in real time, it's Easter. If you celebrate it, a time for families, coming together, renewal, and often a time for holidays. Here where I live in Ibiza, Easter really marks the start of the tourist season. We'd usually see families coming from all over Europe to bask in some April sunshine. Except, of course, right now, no one is travelling, the airports are virtually closed, and all the hotels and restaurants on the island, and probably where you are too, are closed and waiting in hope for the moment we are confident enough to open up. So the episode I have for you this week is something of a homage to Ibiza and the spirit of escape. I recorded it with my guest a couple of months ago, actually, but now feels the perfect time to share some of the stories of the island that are part of his Mojo story. What you'll also get from the episode, if you listen very closely, are some of the sounds of the island, the crashing waves of the Mediterranean, the birdsong, the hum of insects. You'll feel the sun on your face and maybe even the taste of a cold beer in your mouth. This week, the Mojo story is that of Howard Boyle, Ibiza resident and longtime friend of the island. Howard runs Ibiza Unlocked, a villa sales and concierge company. He's a proper fixer, in his own words. For example, we talk about his role in the production of the film Ibiza the Silent Movie by Julian Temple, which covers the history of Ibiza from the Phoenicians through to club culture. Howard shares his own story of escapism, what brought him here for the first time when he blagged a job at Manumission, how he keeps getting pulled back here, and what keeps him here now. He talks about how he has ridden the roller coaster of life with a smile on his face, one that took him from performing with Fatboy Slim on a beach in Rio in front of 500,000 people to mixing cement on a wet building site in Brighton a few days later. Ups and downs for sure. Howard shares his life lessons for keeping his feet on the ground, centered around integrity, respect, and gratitude. And that sense of gratitude is so appropriate during the Great Pause, as I believe this time is giving us a greater appreciation for everything in our lives. So to the interview, and we wanted to capture some of this beautiful environment that we live around on the island of Ibiza. So on the day we recorded, Howard said he had a special place for us to do the interview, but he'd have to show me where. So we met in the car park of Lidl in San Antonio, which is not exactly what I had in mind, but I proceeded to follow Howard's Jeep with some trepidation as we headed towards the coast. We drove down some steep and winding caminos, past evidence of civilization, until we came to the spot he had in mind. As he calls it, one of his favourite contemplation points on the island of Ibiza. It's a beautiful spot, one of many I can't wait to go back to when we can press play on life again. So yeah, here I am with Howard Boyle, and we are, as I said, sat in one of his, I think he's got a few contemplation points on the island that he might tell us about, but maybe not tell us exactly where they are, because they are special and a little bit secret. But this is a stunning one. So, Howard, great to see you. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you, Richard. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for finding the time. I know it's that time of year when people are, and we'll come into what you're doing right now on the island and making their bookings and making their plans. I always start with this question. So how is your mojo today out of 10?
Do you know what? I'm going to go plus 10 because I started off the day very early and I've got a lot done, and I've got loads more to do after this interview. And obviously sitting where we are right now is the nickname for this place is called the High Flat Rocks. And there's a small circle of people that know this place as that name. But we are actually close to Punta Galera, north of San Antonio. So people from the island might know this spot. And you've got stunning views. We're probably about 100 feet up, maybe more, maybe 120, looking out towards the sea, and it is beautiful here.
Because we've had this amazing run of weather, and it shows no signs of ending. But I have to say, firstly, we haven't had a plus 10 on that question yet. So Howard, that's amazing. How do we get to a plus 10?
I think the basis of a plus 10 is the gratitude. Waking up with gratitude. We live on a beautiful island, and I think it's important to stop and look around from time to time, because we get caught up in just running around the day-to-day, you know, work stresses that come with everyday life. And I think that it's just stopping in little spaces like this, as I call it, a contemplation spot, to appreciate the beauty of this place that we're so lucky to call home.
Fabulous. And I love that sentiment of taking that time for gratitude, whether that's, it sounds like with you, might be a daily practice. It's proved to be highly valuable to you to have that take that time to be grateful for what's around you and thankful. So that's great to hear. So on that basis, and when you're thinking about your mojo being this plus 10, what does mojo mean to you? Because you said you're kind of attracted to the name of my podcast series. So what does mojo mean to you?
Mojo means to me, well, what I'm going to call my book one day is called The Roller Coaster Diaries. So mojo means to me the basis of being riding high and then come crashing down to reality, plus like minus reality, going down, 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 and then being able to wear it with a smile and come back up to those dizzy heights again. So I think that's about the mojo, you know. That's what the mojo means to me.
So these highs and lows that life throws at you, that things that happen to you, but be able to bounce back from them with a smile on your face, be grateful for the, as you said, that you used the term grateful earlier, for the great times, and be what, philosophical about the times that aren't so great?
Exactly. What's the old saying? If you're going through hell, keep going. That sounds like a bit of a cliche, but you know, we can get lost in the moment, but lost in the past and looking at the future, but not thinking about the moment. And you could be having all sorts of stresses, but just stop, look at the beauty in the surroundings that you're in, and think about, be grateful for the things that you do have in your life. So I think that the mojo needs constantly recharging. And I think a good way to recharge the mojo is to go back to basics and plug it back into the source, i.e. come to contemplation spots like this. As you mentioned, I've got three around the island. I'll take your good self around to these different places over the time we get to know each other, but they are top secret. They are top secret, and they're so beautiful because you come to these places and it's very rare that you even see anyone here, and that's why they're chosen contemplation spots for me to recharge the mojo.
Well, Howard, I look forward to that. Maybe our next conversation, whether it's recorded or not, we'll do another of the contemplation points. Because as we know, we're in February in Ibiza right now, and it's incredibly sunny, but also very quiet. The tourists, many of your clients, Howard, haven't yet arrived, but when they do, it's hard to find perhaps those moments for contemplation. Do you find that?
It's very true. I mean, this time of the year, I adore the island. I adore the island all the time, all year round. It's hard not to. But there's many people that live here that moan about August. And I understand why. You know, there's traffic everywhere. There's no room on the beach. You know, it's hard to get a reservation in a restaurant. The clubs are rammed. And it's super hot. So it gets a little bit stressful. But it's wearing August with a smile, because obviously in my industry that's where you make a lot of your income that helps, you know, times like this to be able to sit in January, February and enjoy the island. It's because of that hard work you put in August. So the island's beautiful right now. We just had a big Storm Gloria that bashed the Balearics and some of the mainland, and it's cleared the path for beautiful crystal clear skies and the lush green of the fauna and flora of the island. And it's also the almond blossom time.
I love that concept of, you know, the storm came and it did give us quite a battering, but the positive thinking of behind the storm comes this amazing weather. Almost leads to your point about when you're in hell, keep going, because then you're going to get to the glorious weather perhaps.
Yeah, it's very, very true. Very, very true. And this time of year in my industry, we're planning for the summer. So it's running around preparation for the execution of my business when the clients arrive in the summer months, you know. So my business is an all year round business.
So Howard, we're going to talk a lot about it, but you've clearly got a very deep love as well as knowledge for this island, and you bring a lot of clients here and you show friends these, like me, these amazing places. But from your accent, we're going to guess you weren't born here or brought up here. Let's take it back a bit to when I guess you were thinking of escaping the UK, because you told me a little bit about that. Tell me about your escape the UK story.
Well, there's obviously a funny story behind how I eventually arrived here, and that happened in June 1998. So basically, I got to Gatwick Airport. I was 19, just about to turn 20. I had some money in my back pocket and I thought, you know, I'd just keep it simple and go to Spain, get a one-way ticket and maybe work down there in the Costa del Sol. Around that area, I didn't really have a definitive place to go. It was like on a whim. I was young, I was hungry, things weren't working out for me in my hometown, so let's give it a go elsewhere. Anyway, I'm sitting in Gatwick Airport, having a couple of beers, contemplating my next move or my next destination, and I met these two American guys. They come in, I'll always remember them, big burly American guys, and they were over in the UK to see Ozzy Osbourne play. It was called the Ozfest that he'd done every June back in that time. And they got drunk with me at the bar and they said, look, we're going to Ibiza. So a group of lads they bumped into in a bar in London told them about Ibiza, and they'd just come back on a stag holiday, so it was all fresh for them. And these guys had 3 days to kill before the Ozfest, and they'd done all the tourist stuff in London, so they was like, right, let's get out of London for a couple of days and go partying. So they told me the story. I was like, boom, I'm coming with you. So I brought a one-way ticket. Got off the plane, we put our bags directly into the hotel in Playa del Bossa. And it was like, I think we arrived like early, you know, like, you know, the 3-4 a.m. kind of flight we arrived. And then we had a few drinks around Playa del Bossa, moseyed around, and this guy, this Dutch guy, I'll always remember him, he said, oh, you should go to, he was like a PR guy outside one of the bars there. He said, you guys should go to space. I was like, what time is it open? It was like open at 8 a.m. in those times. So I was like, right, fantastic. So I went straight over to space, and, you know, we had a great time in there. The American guys kind of got tired and petered off a little bit. I met another group of people that were the workers on the island, and they told me about Manumission, and it happened to be Manumission opening party at Privilege. So I went up there. I went up there on my own, and I walked in the doors and I thought, wow, what is this? You know, I've arrived. And I met a couple of the guys that were entertainers there, and they're still my very best friends now. Kevin Randall and Keith Smith, to name but a few, but they were the main ones that kind of stayed my best friends over the years. And yeah, they kind of said, look, you know, we have this weekly ritual where we walk back from Privilege to San Antonio. They'd done it the year before in 1997. And I joined them and we walked all the way back along the motorway and in amongst the farmland along the side of the motorway. And it was kind of their weekly thing. And it was funny, you know, we had a great time. We arrived back at San Antonio to the where the after party used to be hosted at a place called Bar M, which is now called Ibiza Rocks Bar. And I don't know what happened. We just spontaneously swam out to sea, well, in the marina there, and all the boats were a little bit closer at those times to the shore. And we were climbing all around these boats, and this guy come out of one of the cabins on a boat next to this one that we'd, you know, pirates trying to steal this boat. But we were just having a laugh. But, you know, they were dressed up. One was dressed up as a Spanish cleaner, you know, with the feather duster. One was dressed up, Keith was dressed up as a baby with a big nappy on. I think we had Sharky dressed as a clown and numerous other crazy people there. And this guy just realised that we wasn't really criminals. We weren't proper real pirates and stealing the boat. So he felt sorry for us and just like, right, before the Coast Guard arrives, let's take these guys back to shore. So we got a standing ovation from all the people that had come back from Manumission for the after party for our antics. And one of the guys on the shore was like, you should have a job with us. You know, you should be an entertainer. And he was called Dorian Payne, and he was the head of the entertainers for Manumission. And he said, come for a work meeting next week. I turned up the following week. He said, oh, you're a little bit late, Howard, but have a rummage through what's in the bag. So I rummaged through. There was only two things left in there. The first thing I pulled out was a Elvis Presley outfit. And I got a job as Elvis Presley.
Obviously. I just love that story. I mean, what a job interview in a way, to have the gumption and the joy just to swim out with a baby and a Spanish cleaner to a boat, come back again and obviously be Elvis.
That was it. Elvis was born. I used to call him Helvis with an H, H-E-L-V-I-S, so Helvis. And the whole idea was, if Elvis lived on beyond his you know, tragic heart attack on the toilet, then he would have lived on in Ibiza as a hellraiser.
I can see him here. It's definitely his kind of place. I mean, I don't know about the if the burgers are up to his kind of standard everywhere, but certainly is a place for hell raising in the day and maybe now as well.
Yeah, you've got to pick your moments, I suppose. There's still magic here in that regard. So then what happened was after that, I become this Elvis character on a whim, you know, from going to Gatwick Airport, not knowing where I'm going to go to a week later being an Elvis Presley impersonator. I met up with my friend, my best friend, Adam Hubbard. He was working in Bar M at that time. So we linked up, and then I become this, as I say, this Elvis character, and I've done a little bit of work on the side with Adam and also with Manumission as a whole. So I helped build the shantytown, the famous shantytown on the roof of the famous or the infamous Manumission Motel.
Infamous. Now I have I never visited the infamous Manumission Motel, but what sort of things happened there?
Well, it was originally, before Manumission took it over, it was actually a brothel, and it had actually got raided 2 years before. So when there's a guy called Eric the Viking, he was the owner of the property, become the owner of the property, and Mike and Claire were, you know, the hosts of it, and they made it the Manumission Motel, and it was a partnership. So when they actually first took it over, I always remember they went in and there was actually glasses were still dusting them from when the police had raided the brothel 2 years before to when they took it over. So we went in there and I was a carpenter at the time. Well, I'm a qualified carpenter, so that's how I got the role there. And the idea was originally to build a beach setting on the roof. But, you know, the idea changed. It became a shanty town, and our friend Sid Shanty became the chef up there, and it was, you know, it's a really cool hangout. So going back to your question, it used to be the hangout for the performers and for the DJs that come over. They all stayed there. So you had like the likes of Howard Mark staying there. You had Derek DeLarge, all his DJs, John Carter, Fatboy Slim stayed there as well. I think Kate Moss stayed there. Become this infamous place. And it was like, and Johnny the Dwarf was the doorman. The famous Johnny the Dwarf, Johnny Golden, he was the doorman there. So it was a really kind of quirky vibe. So that was part of the Manumission kind of, you know, scope that they had going on. So anyway, so on a Monday night, I was Elvis Presley. That evolved. I think there was after year one, I started getting some magazines, you know, the Mixed Mag, big dance music magazines. They were writing about me, saying they're the crazy Elvis guy. And then so I went up to Andy McKay, you know, the owner of Manumission, Mike and Andy. And I said to him, I would like a pay rise. And he said, you've got to stop walking around my club drunk and just with an inflatable guitar with your Elvis wig, you know, facing the other way. If you want a pay rise, you've got to come up with something. So I went away and thought about things. I was like, right, okay, they do these mad theatric shows. They do live sex shows on the stage there. But they also do these cool theatrical shows. And they were bringing in this troupe of acrobats called Shim Jim Rui. And they were a spin-off from Cirque du Soleil. They kind of like spun off from them, created Shim Jim Rui. And they come over and done some really cool stuff at Manumission. So I was like, oh, right, those guys are doing that. I'm not an acrobat, but, you know, I've got a good idea where I get wheeled out on a toilet with a headboard saying rest in peace Elvis, eating a cheeseburger, dying, getting pulled to the roof and bungee jumped back down with angel wings on. So that was my idea. So I went back to Andy McKay, and I hope you're listening to this, Andy. There's a myth that I'm the only worker that he's ever had or employee that ever got a pay rise. So anyway, basically I come up with the idea, we practiced it, we rehearsed it, and it went really well. And that was my gig. That was Elvis peaking. You know, I just spun the whole thing about him dying on the toilet on its head and created the resurrection of Elvis. So, yeah, it was good.
I love a lot about that, but I love the, I love the boss's view of, well, you've got to give me more than what you're doing right now for a pay rise. I mean, everyone in whatever you're doing, and I know it might be a bit of a stretch to compare your life as Elvis to someone working in an office in Basingstoke. But there is something about your boss asking you for more and you coming back with a really creative solution that blows said boss away, right?
Yeah, I think he was dumbstruck, and it got good reviews again from the magazines, dance music magazines, and obviously people on the island and stuff. And They had like Fatboy Slim playing there. He was a resident at that time as well, and we got friendly. And then off the back of doing those kind of shows, I went on tour with him around the world. I went on tour with Jamiroquai. Well, say tour, I'd done a couple of gigs with them. The biggest one being in Barcelona in front of, I think it was like 30,000 people. And I opened the show. It was their world tour, 2001. And that was amazing. That was a highlight of my career. So I went around the world. I went to Geneva, of all places. I went to New York, of all places. What was funny was going to a Mojo story was, I remember being on a building site and the foreman was a complete, you know, as I said, I was a carpenter, but that time I was actually just doing some labouring work. And I'd just come back from the summer in Ibiza, and the foreman was a complete, you know, like real hard head. And I was like, this is not really going to work. And then all of a sudden, I'd only been there for 4 days, and I get a phone call from Danny Tenaglia's manager, Kevin McGrath. And he said, you know, Elvis, are you available? It's Danny's birthday. We're doing a big gig at a club called Vinyl, which has gone down in history as one of the best clubs, especially in New York anyway, that and Twilo. So anyway, I said, yeah, well, when's the gig? And they said, well, it's this week. You know, can you come? Can you fly Thursday and back on the Monday? So I went up to the boss and said, I need a couple of days off. And he said, well, what do you need it off for? I said, well, I've got an Elvis gig in New York. And he didn't believe me. He said, I've heard some really good excuses in my time, but I don't believe it. Anyway, I flew off to New York, done the gig, had a great time, Tenaglia's place and the Vinyl. Then we went back to this warehouse party after in Brooklyn, which was incredible. It was like something out of a film, you know. This big old rusty door, and you don't think anything's going on. The door swings open, and there's like 300 people partying in there. It was great. And anyway, on the Tuesday, I went back to work, and the foreman went, where did you really go? I said, I was Elvis in New York. And he never believed me. Anyway, so that's a Mojo story, going back to the building site after flying high.
And on that, yeah, thanks for sort of bringing it back to the theme, to the source, exactly. So you're in a position where, you, as you say, you're actually a carpenter, but you're doing, a job below that. You're doing some labouring to fill in.
Yeah.
And then you get this opportunity, and you go and you're back in kind of where you've been in the high life with these superstar DJs in these amazing locations. And then you're back again on the Tuesday morning moving bricks around. How do you deal with that?
Well, I'll tell you what, I was holding back tears because it was freezing cold. It was the dead of winter. My hands are, you know, icicles coming off my hands. And I was like, wow, if this doesn't keep you grounded, then I don't know what will, you know. And I think just being real about it, just thinking those giddy heights are great, but they're not always sustainable. It's not always going to be like that. So sometimes you've got to come back down to go back up again. Hence the title of my book in the future, The Roller Coaster Diaries. Yeah. One minute you could be there, next minute you could be there. And that's another reason why I strongly feel about why you should never be disrespectful to people. You're never better than that person, because one day you could be that person. So you've got to wear the giddy heights with an extremely large smile, but wear the lows with a smile as well, because the giddy heights are going to come back if you have the right attitude.
Got it. And it's that seeing that as a, right, I'm getting grounded here, this is actually a positive thing, because I need to feel that sense of, this is where I am right now. Yeah. I'm not always going to be at those high heights. Because I guess if you're, I know you'll have come across a lot of these people who spent all their time in those high heights, and then the coming down must be incredibly difficult. Did you experience any of that from people in your sort of in your circle?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to say any names, but of course, and some of them never come back from that, you know. You know, addiction kind of took over in some cases and stuff, because they're just stuck in that giddy heights thing. And I think it's important to be real, you know, like be really real and appreciate those moments, but also appreciate the down moments as well. I mean, the biggest case of that is almost a repeat of what I've just said, was fast forward into the end of my Elvis career, was the last ever gig I ever did was with Fatboy Slim, Norman Cook, in Rio de Janeiro, in front of 475,000 people was the official numbers at the end. It was a free party put on by Nokia, and of course he'd done the famous one in Brighton, which was 250,000. So if you see, you know, that was huge in my hometown. It was huge, and this was double that. of course, Rio de Janeiro's got longer beaches, so they can fill those those gaps with those people. But it was a unique situation. It happened spontaneously again. I just happened to be backpacking through South America. And at that time, I had a website called disgracelands.net. So I used to call my house Disgracelands. Well, I still do, but just a joke between friends. But I actually had an apartment with a plaque on the wall, Disgracelands. So anyway, I had this website, and the idea was I'd go around like the world and get photographs, Elvis at Machu Picchu, Elvis at, you know, the Christ statue in Rio de Janeiro, blah, 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 blah. And then, anyway, just so happened to be in Rio. And then I saw the posters everywhere about Norman playing, so I called him up. He was like, "Where are you? I need your help." He was panicking. He wanted like a crowd revver. So I was, for want of a better phrase, with the shows that I'd done with Norman, it wasn't the dying on the toilet show. It was like I'd come on in between acts or introduce him or as in the middle of his set and just get the crowd going. And that's what he wanted. So he was just rambling on the phone saying, "Look, where's your Elvis suit? I'll get it over here. I'll FedEx it over." And at the time I used to live in Ibiza, but I used to go back and like spend some time with my grandmother, and he knew that. He was like, "I'll fly your nan over." "I'll fly your nan over with the Elvis suit." I was like, "Calm down, Norm." I said, "It's in the bag. I'm just down the road from you now. Where are you?" Gave me where his address, the hotel, Ipanema Plaza. Went down there, had a couple of cocktails with him, and he said, "Right, let's do it. Just, you know, you got the you know what to do, and we've done it a million times before together," which we had. So I was like, "Right, okay, cool." He said, "Meet me downstairs tomorrow at 3 p.m. 3 p.m. I arrived there. There's a motorcade of 6 cars, 2 police bikes at the front, 2 at the back, and there's roadblocks all the way through because he's huge in South America, especially in Brazil. They love him there. So anyways, flying around the Copacabana beach, coming around to Flamenco Beach is where we've done it. Yeah, Flamenco Beach, just past Ipanema. So it's Copacabana, Ipanema, Flamenco Beach. Anyway, so we get there and there's like 150,000 people there at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And we're both looking out, and he goes, "Oh, are you nervous?" It's like, "Nervous? I said, there's 150,000 people there. We're not on until 9 p.m. Anyway, we go backstage, we have a few drinks. Anyway, this about 6 p.m, it's time for him to have his press conference. Press conference starts, and it's all like, you know, the well-known MTV hosted it, but there was also local and international press there. And then halfway through, he's a very modest guy, but he's like, "Right, you know, that's it. You know, no more questions." And everyone was piling out of this room. And he was like, "Elvis, Elvis," like that. So he called me back. Everyone's getting kicked out of the room. He's called me back. He goes, "Are you nervous?" I said, "Nervous." I said, "There's like three, the last calculation, there's like 300,000 people there now." So anyway, we have a couple of quick shots to get our, get our nerves ready and calm our nerves, I should say. Anyway, so pre-match tension, the butterflies. And then he says, "You're going to know when to go on and you're going to know when to come off." And that was it. I got taken out the front and having a little boogie. And then before I knew it, like an hour or two had passed and he's playing. And then the security come and got me. And they went, "There he is with the torches." Grabbed me. I was in my civilian clothes. The promoter and the security took me backstage, got me dressed, and then pushed me on stage in front of nearly 500,000 people. And I very nearly fell off the stage. I had a big thick Elvis glasses on and I literally didn't see the end of the stage. It was a point where I was like tiptoeing like that. So anyway, if anyone's listening to this and they want to check it out, it's on YouTube called Are We Having Fun Yet? Fatboy Slim, Are We Having Fun Yet? It's a couple of minutes in, you can see a little snippet of me on the stage with him. And it was great, you know, we just ad-libbed and really had a great time. I was on stage for 5 minutes, but it was the biggest moment of my life. And it's still the biggest gig that he's ever done. And of course, he's always out gigging around the world and he's as big as ever. And we talk about that from time to time. It's still the biggest gig that he ever done.
What I love is when he asked you a few times, "Are you nervous?" You seem to be counting the people, but never saying whether you were nervous or not.
I think it was like, you know, the mojo spectrum. It's like when I say 300,000 plus, that means that my nerves are right up there on the Richter scale, just going bing. So yeah, we had a few shots, and I think maybe one too many, which calmed the nerves, but nearly sent me over the edge in terms of falling off the stage.
Quite literally over the edge of the stage.
and then the reason why I tell this story, obviously because it's a highlight of my life, I'm going to tell the story. Literally 3 days later, again, like the New York story, I was back on the building site, literally 3 or 4 days later, and And I remember this builder, this bricklayer, going, you know, as they say on building sites, pug up, meaning get some more cement, pug up. And then I just felt like saying to him, don't you know who I thought I was? Don't you know who I thought I was 4 days ago?
Let's forward a little bit. So then you talked about sort of life post Helvis.
Yes.
And moving into, I think you said, your words, a little bit more serious work.
Well, what happened was, after that day, I hung up the blue suede shoes, so to speak, because I realised that I was never going to beat that, number one, that gig. And I started getting inquiries, and the one inquiry that really made me say, that's it, game over, no more Helvis, was my friend's mother was the director of a mental institution, and they were having an open day and they wanted some performers to go down there. So I was like, right, okay, Helvis going down to the Nut House. I might never get out of there. I might end up with a rhinestone straitjacket and be like in a padded room scenario. So I was like, no, that's it, game over. So then I always had a knowledge of carpentry, you know, construction carpentry. So I went back to college, you know, learnt that trade, took myself a lot more serious. And in a lot of ways, looking back, you know, I never have any regrets, but I was doing very well and earning a lot of money being a complete nutcase. But it didn't have longevity. And I saw that. So I was like, well, okay, do you know what? There is a serious side to me. There's a comedy side and a serious side. So I took myself back to college, got a qualification in carpentry, as I said, and then done that for a couple of years. And then I realised that it wasn't really what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I realised that I was better with my mouth, so to speak, selling than I was for, you know, using my hands in that way. So then I ended up, you know, living in London, Brighton, my hometown again, ended up in Barcelona, and then ended up in Dubai, of all places, selling property. So I was over there, and it wasn't really for me. Great lifestyle, but it was a bit too, you know, corporate style. So it wasn't really where I wanted to be. And the whole time I was there, I talk about Ibiza as a she. It's definitely a her. The energy is a her. You know, she's a very powerful energy. So then I decided to come back home, come back to my spiritual home in 2015 with the idea of setting up a company. My company's called Ibiza Unlocked. It didn't have a name at that time. And then when I come here, I had to find my feet again. And then through numerous different, you know, reconnections to the island and new connections to new people here, I finally come up with Ibiza Unlocked and launched that in May 2017. Mm-hmm. And we're in the third year now. My company is based on my connections of the island and you know, I act as a fixer. You know, I'd have a concierge department, which I prefer to call a fixer. You know, you fix things for people. They want to go to Pasha last minute, you get the best table. I deal with yachts. Yachts come in. I do yacht services, i.e. they want the best mooring outside Leo. I have good relationship with a harbour master. I make that happen. And ultimately, the company is a real estate company. So we want to sell property. So, you know, we're selling the inside knowledge of the island to then sell the property. And it's kind of working. It's like a lifestyle sort of management thing. But then the company, because of people like connections with Norman again, going back to Fatboy Slim, and I obviously feel like I'm dropping names here, but you can't tell these stories without saying the name. So he got signed up to the film called Ibiza the Silent Movie as the musical director, and he gave me the opportunity to be one of the fixers on the film. They'd already had a couple of people working on there that I ended up working alongside, and then I become one of the producers and helped broker some of the archive footage deals. My good friend Phil Silcock done a lot of footage, took a lot of footage here during the manumission days, and some other stuff he'd done for a company called Digital Arts, and all that stuff finally got the dust blown off it, and it saw the light of day and entered the film. The film is about the complete history of the island, from the Phoenicians to the Romans, pirates, all civil war, all the way through to dance music era and the era that we're in right now. But you know, this era that we're in right now only takes up 15 minutes of the film because it's telling the whole history of the island. Silent movie, music, a soundscape of music brings the story through with sound cards going up, and it's a beautiful film. It's an honour to have been involved with that film, and it's one of the biggest things that I've had the experience and been involved in my life. And again, it goes back to Norman, you know, so a good friend of mine. So I thank him for both of those epic moments in my life.
Well, I mean, and you're sharing that story, Howard, and thank you, because I really enjoyed watching that film. It was I saw you mention it, and it was on BBC Four a while ago. Hopefully, it still is. If you do get a chance to see it, I would highly recommend it, because it does paint a very different picture of this beautiful island than most people tend to see. As you say, the full history, right up to date, but with a quirky take to it from Julian Temple, the very talented director. But what I'm really minded from what you're talking about is these relationships that have always been important for you during your life, and how those relationships, as you say, you've carefully guarded them. I know there's a lot of stories that you won't mention people's names because you just wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But tell me about those relationships and their value to you. And obviously I asked this question with kind of Mojo in mind, these highs and these lows.
Well, I think it's important to have integrity. I was raised by my grandparents. I was raised the old school way with manners and stuff like that. And I think that there's lots of people in this world that are on a smash and grab. You know, they're just looking at short-term gains when there's a long-term view, you know. And just because people are rich and famous doesn't mean that they're going to give you anything. Do you know what I mean? People in that stature and that you know, who are well known, or maybe not well known, but have that kind of wealth, will only ever sort of work with you or pass you referrals or recommendations or introductions after you've earned trust. It's not like you're going for a test or anything, but you've got to earn trust, and you do that through integrity and not wanting anything from people, you know. And I'll give you an example through Norman from the film. I built a relationship with Julian Temple, great guy, and got friendly with his son Leo as well. He was one of the main researchers of the film. He'd done some great work. And Mark Commode, the film critic, critiqued the film, and he loved the film. And he said something famous along the lines of, it's a film that educates you about something that you never knew about, but now you want to know about. So he come over on holiday with his family. Julian gave passed my number on to Mark, and then Mark come over with his family, and I looked after them, showed him a great time. We went to Norman's birthday party at Pike's, and he showed him a good time as well, really pulled out all the stops for Mark and his family. Mark, in turn, sends my number to David Holmes. David Holmes is a film scorer and composer.
Yeah.
He done all the music for Ocean's 11, yeah. 12, 13. He just done The Laundromat with Steven Soderbergh, who come out of retirement as a director, Hollywood director, to do that film. He just made a film called Ordinary Love with Liam Neeson, and he was one of the producers and co-scored that. It's about, you know, a husband and wife, a true story about his friend. His wife got breast cancer. It's about coping. The film's about coping. And he done a beautiful score on that. And anyway, he got in contact with me. I went and met him for a beer. He was already on the island. He's well known on the island, but he hadn't played here for a number of years. And he said, look, I don't want any of your concierge services, but can you get me a gig on the island? So we end up putting a couple of events on over a weekend. We done Pike's with him and Alfredo played, and then we done the next day Hostel de Torre, and it's called I Heard Wonders. It's his musical concept where he's just playing music from all around the world. So it's called I Heard Wonders, which is based on a track that he made on his album about 10 years ago, which was actually in the Olympics. It was one of the Olympic the London Olympic theme tunes, I Heard Wonders. Anyway, lovely guy. The reason why I tell that story is, again, too many names being dropped here, but what I'm trying to say is, in amongst these stories, is through me having integrity and going that extra mile with these people and showing them that I'm not out, you know, trying to grab at stuff, I'm building a network of people, because I'm working on an island that's saturated with people doing the same thing. There's a million and one yogis, a million and one cameramen, a million and one DJ, certainly a million and one concierge and real estate agents. But through these networks, through one recommendation, it's led on to this. And then after David, where does that go? Does Steven Soderbergh want to come on holiday and then I get past the number? Maybe, or maybe not, or maybe someone else. But through integrity and going through those Mojo periods, then magic can happen.
That's lovely wisdom. And that's what I love about all the people from so many different backgrounds that I get onto the Mojo podcast, is the wisdom that gets shared. And that sense of coming back to a really core value of yours, integrity being an absolute heart of who you are and what your business is based on, is really important and great to hear. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you very much.
So I can't let you go, though, without... it was always my final question. Because obviously we could sit here for a really long time and talk about a load more Ibiza yeah. stories, but that's probably a different podcast for that. But this has been a great examination through your roller coaster of life as you talk about and how that impacts your mojo and exactly what it means to you. And what is it that you're doing for yourself almost on a daily basis, perhaps, to really look after your mojo? And you've definitely reflected right at the beginning about how mojo does go up and down. It's not a constant state. It needs work. What are you doing, Howard?
Well, I think there's a lot more that I should be doing. Number one, there's a lot more that I should be doing. But what I am doing is the gratitude thing. You know, I'll jump in the car or I'll just open the door in my new place and just see the beautiful countryside, the campo, and just realise how lucky I am to be living here. But like a friend said to me, he said, oh, don't you get bored there in the winter? And I said, look, it's like this. Wherever you live on the planet, you've got to hustle. You've got to work hard. I would rather be hustling in the sunshine on an island where I want to be. I feel at home here. I feel 100% like I belong here and I'm going to stay here. I have a deep, deep love for the island, as we can tell. And but there's always room for improvement. What I do need to be doing is getting on the fitness buzz. I need to sort that out. My Spanish is kind of getting there. It's like intermediate level. It should be a lot more than what it is, but I do get away with it. That's improvement that I need to do there. And I think that's another thing about the mojo is you've always got to be learning. And, you know, every day is a school day, and be willing to take time to study, read the sales books, read the, you know, the self-motivation, you know, self-help books and stuff like that. But also put time to aside for yourself to be able to, you know, take stock of everything and appreciate what you've got.
So that gratitude, appreciation, a few things that you say there's room for improvement on, which is, you know, everyone's got that, and I love that. Every day's a school day. We're all constantly learning, which is so important.
It's very important, and a little bit of a cliche, you know, we're always looking at the future, we're always looking to the future, to the past, and not really taking stock about what's going on in the present. And the reason why it's called the present is because it's a gift.
Yeah, absolutely, amen to that. And given where we're sitting right now, and I will share a picture when this episode comes out, you will see why we think it's a gift and this incredible spot that Howard's brought us to. So thank you, Howard Boyle. Thank you so much for the stories, the wisdom, the entertainment that you shared with us today.
Thank you very much, Richard, and it's great to be on the show.
Well, I hope you enjoyed some of the sounds of Ibiza and, of course, Howard's wonderful mojo story. He'll have no shortage of stories for his book when he writes it. And I'm wondering if he's using this time during the Great Pause to do just that, to write the roller coaster diaries, as he calls them. Now, if you fancy seeing more of Howard's Rio performance with Fatboy Slim, there's a link in the show notes. And I've also added a link to the trailer for the film Ibiza the Silent Movie. Certainly worth watching right now. And it's got a cracking soundtrack from the aforementioned Fatboy Slim on it too. So what are the lessons from this episode? I mean, so many. We all have ups and downs in life, of course. That's what life is all about. But perhaps managing yourself on that roller coaster is the test. And for Howard, a focus on gratitude is what gets him through. And I think it's good for all of us to think about. In fact, I did a whole Mojo Toolkit episode on gratitude a few months ago, if you're interested in hearing more about that. Of course, the importance of integrity in relationships and how respect for those relationships has helped Howard build new connections. Pretty vital for his business and for his own sense of self. My other reason for releasing this episode now is to sow the seed in your minds about when you can escape and adventure again beyond our own homes and actually travel and holiday again. Now, I know Ibiza as a destination will be okay in the long run. It's a beautiful place, and so many of you will have experienced magical times here. It's got a very, very strong holiday brand, of course. But it's likely the 2020 season will be massively delayed and potentially a complete write-off. We just don't know yet. But when you can come over, please do. And when you come, check out businesses like Howard's. They will all need support in the months ahead.
And that goes for my previous guests as well. For example, Toby from Walking Ibiza in episode 5, Donna from Running Ibiza in episode 7. All these small businesses will need your support in the years to come. So I really hope you enjoyed the episode. Please do subscribe, leave that 5-star rating, and if you could do me a huge favour, write a short review on Apple Podcasts. Just scroll down on the show page and you should be able to find it. That review really does make the Mojo Podcast more discoverable for more people. So until next week, I really hope your mojo continues to flow.